This is Scott Becker with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. I'm thrilled today to be joined by Thomas Biga. Tom is the CEO, the president of the hospital division at RWJ Barnabas. Great system, great leader. Tom, can you take a moment and introduce yourself?
Sure. Thanks, Scott. Pleasure to be here today with you. My name is Thomas Biga. I'm president of the hospital division at RWJ Barnabas Health. Barnabas Health is a $6 billion company. We have 11 acute care hospitals, 4 children's hospitals, and a behavioral health hospital. We're the largest healthcare provider in the state of New Jersey, and we have about 33,000 employees, 8,000 physicians, and we're the second largest private employer in the state. So we cover a lot of territory in New Jersey.
So really amazing that the health system, and this is so true in so many states and areas, has become the largest employer, one of the largest employers in the state. Talk for a moment about RWJ Barnabas and a couple things that you take particular pride in. You know, what lights you up about RWJ Barnabas?
Sure, Scott. Sure. Thank you. You know, first and foremost, you know, I have to mention the way in which we dealt with the COVID crisis. I couldn't be more proud of our employees and physicians who did everything they could to take care of the patients. As you know, we were hit very hard in New Jersey, but the manner in which our employees, and that's all employees, both clinical staff, support staff, physicians, you know, they've placed themselves in harm's way to care for the sickest of the sick during the crisis. And unfortunately, you know, many colleagues got sick and some actually passed away, which was very unfortunate and, left an impact on our staff. But we could never thank them enough for their sacrifice, compassion, and empathy. And, you know, what I just described, I'm sure any hospital and health system in the country could describe. I mean, healthcare workers are very, very special people. So getting away from COVID for a minute, one of the things that I'm proud of is the way we're dealing with patient safety. You know, it was felt by senior management a number of years ago that although patient safety was improving, it wasn't improving fast enough for us. So in 2017, we embarked on a high reliability journey to improve patient safety. And it was based on safety in the aviation industry and in the nuclear power plant industry. And the goal was to cause zero patient harm. And we entitled this program throughout our enterprise, it's called Safety Together. So we engaged industry experts to train all our staff, 33,000 employees and the 8,000 docs I mentioned, in the tools, techniques, and processes that would allow us to reduce patient safety. As you could probably imagine, training all these people was no easy task, specifically when you have a lot of private attending physicians. But we did accomplish it and, you know, was embraced by the staff, and now our staff speaks up for safety whenever they can. We've seen a culture change in the entire way and manner in which we provide patient care. So any staff member under this program, under this journey, can question the manner in which we're caring for patients if they feel the patient's safety is in danger. And this applies to anyone in the organization, regardless of their position. So as a result of this, we've seen our safety metrics significantly improve. Our leapfrog scores have gone up. Serious safety events have gone down. So, you know, this is not a flavor of the month or a program. It's the way we do business now, and it's part of our culture. So I'm very proud of, you know, how we're continuing our journey on improving patient care. I'm also proud of the way we've integrated other entities into our system. Integration is a key word in merger and acquisition activities. And, you know, we've done it well in a number of different circumstances. You know, we've brought in standalone hospitals over time into our system successfully. And, you know, it's not easy having a facility adopt to a new structure when they join a system. There's a lot of constituents you have to bring along, obviously board members, medical staff, employees, management team, and even community leaders. And, you know, to achieve the benefits of being a system, you have to have consistency as well as uniformity in operating the system. So you have to change the way the acquired entity behaves. You know, I feel our team has excelled at integrating these new assets, being skilled enough to, you know, change past practices while at the same time welcome them into the new team and into the fold and being part of the system. Each integration, you know, has its own nuances. So you've seen one integration, you've seen one. It's not a cookie cutter approach to bringing these entities in. A couple years ago, integration took on a new role for us because we weren't bringing in a single facility or a single ambulatory entity in. We were actually, we merged two systems together, which was much different. We had Barnabas Health merged with RWJ Health. And, you know, it went very well. We created a new system successfully. We had participation from both legacy teams creating a shared vision and purpose. You know, we've done a lot over the last couple of years, but I think the good news and integration was so successful that there's many opportunities ahead of us that will continue to lead us throughout this journey and continue to be a major provider of care in the state of New Jersey.
Thomas, thank you. So really, three core things that you really point towards. The work of your 33,000 plus people in dealing with COVID-19 and the pride there, and as you said, similar to many health systems, but not to be understated how important that is. Two, the journey to greatness and quality and safety and patient experience every day. And finally, third, again, not to be understated, the importance of great integration of systems, because if not done well, it's a real debacle. Thomas, before we talk about sort of your priorities and your thoughts on leadership and ideas and advice for people, talk a little bit about Thomas Biga and sort of your journey to leadership.
Sure. You know, my career was interesting. It's kind of boring, straightforward. You know, and I was blessed with several mentors along the way. But, you know, my mother was a nurse and I had an affinity towards healthcare. The major employer in our town was a hospital. Many of our neighbors were involved in healthcare. So early on, I expressed an interest in hospital administration, even in high school. And, you know, a career day was published and lo and behold, the local hospital administrator read it and asked me to spend a day with him. And I did that and the rest is history. I majored in healthcare administration, went right to grad school. And I did it at my administrative residency at a 100-bed hospital with management assets that were far and few between. The good news there is you get to be chief cook and bottle washer during your first job, so you learn a lot. You know, it was kind of baptism by fire, but, you know, my experience there was very beneficial. I left there in 2 years, became a VP of operations at a 150-bed hospital. And I went to law school at night. And one of the things I would advise to emerging leaders is try to get as much education as you can, even on a part-time basis. I'll talk more about that in a minute. But so I was there for 9 years. Then I needed, I felt I needed a larger experience, a bigger hospital. So I took a risk. And again, emerging leaders need to take risks as well. It's not, everything doesn't work out as planned. So I took a risk and we moved to New Jersey. And I knew nothing about New Jersey. I'm from Connecticut. My wife's from Massachusetts. But I got the job in New Jersey and took a risk and it paid off in spades for me because I'm still in New Jersey 28 years later. But I went to Monmouth Medical Center for 3 years and that's when systems started forming and St. Barnabas Healthcare System came together. So I took a second risk. I was asked to run a small hospital, inner city hospital that was failing. And the risk there was, I was told by the CEO, you know, you could take this job and it may close in a year and you may lose your job, but if you turn it around, there'll be better things for you. So I decided to take that risk and lo and behold, did well and a much larger hospital joined our system. I was asked to run that for 12 years successfully. And I've been in the current position for 11 years. So, you know, very fortunate being in a system for all those years, it's like being in a big company. There are opportunities that continue to present themselves. And I think the environment in which we find ourselves now, the standalone hospital is becoming a dinosaur and these more and more systems are forming. And as we know, big systems are coming together now. So that's a quick snapshot, Scott, of how I ended up where I am today.
Well, just fantastic, Thomas. And so true about how so many people grew up in a small hospital learning their trade and then became into bigger and bigger systems in terms of different kinds of sophistication, different kinds of systems, all kinds of things that make a difference that allow some people to transition well from small to large systems and others not so well. Talk for a moment about picking up on your last discussion, advice that you would have for emerging leaders?
Sure. Again, as I just mentioned, you know, I think first and foremost, education is key, because as you move up the line, you know, the talent pool gets much more rigorous. And what sets you apart from the next candidate? Clearly, experience does, but advanced degrees do as well. So I would tell anyone, do as much as you can, whether it's advanced degrees, certifications, depending on your area of interest, et cetera. The other thing is try to get your work product noticed by your supervisor, or better yet, your supervisor's boss, in a way that makes sense. You know, nothing touts your skills better than an exemplary job on a project or a goal that was achieved or exceeded in a significant way. I mean, talking a good game only gets you so far. You know, you, especially nowadays, you know, results speak for themselves. You know, so try to make yourself an indispensable asset to your employer. Volunteer for things. You know, don't be overly concerned about your next job opportunity before you've proven yourself in the job that you're in. You know, as I mentioned, we're a big company and we have a lot of openings and we're people are moving around all the time. But unfortunately, you know, I've seen this happen more than once in my career, where very qualified and capable people come into a job with their gaze and attention on the next opportunity. You know, their performance in the current job isn't what it could be or should be because they're spending too much time posturing for that next promotion. They ultimately don't get it. They're disappointed. And ultimately, they may lose the job they're in. And so, you know, you have to be patient. Patience is a virtue. Unfortunately, it's fleeting at times, but you have to stay the course. The last thing I would say is keep an open mind as to the direction of your career. You need to be flexible. You need to take calculated risks. And I described a couple that I took earlier. Today, healthcare is much more expansive than it was in the past. You know, in addition to the opportunities in traditional venues like hospitals, long-term care, et cetera, you know, recent federal policy changes over the last number of years created positions in areas we didn't even hear about 15, 20 years ago. Population health, for example, wellness, the whole ambulatory platform, and even, you know, the virtual platforms now with telehealth. I mean, telehealth was a godsend during the pandemic, and that will continue. So there are a lot of opportunities where your career can go. So even though you may be set on something today, keep an open mind, because there are many, many different opportunities and venues in which you could find yourself in.
Well, Tom, I love those five pieces of advice. I'm going to summarize very quickly for our audience. Education, never stop learning. You went and did advanced degrees, and they helped you tremendously. Second, great job at what you're doing, and make sure you're noticed, but you can't worry so much about being noticed in front of doing a great job. Results matter and are very important. Third is, and so important, at the end of the day, every job becomes about being indispensable to who you're working for in the organization. The people that get the raises, the promotions, everything else are those that are needed. And when it comes time for layoffs or promotions, you want to be somebody that's on the right side of that list where people say, we need this person. The fourth piece of advice, which I absolutely love, is do great in the job that you're in, and don't spend too much time focusing on the next job. You first and foremost have to do great at what you're doing. And finally, fifth, open-minded and flexible in terms of what you're doing, opportunities, where you look for opportunities, what you're willing to take on, keeping an open mind and a flexible mind. Tom, let me turn to another subject. In depth of, you're running the hospital division, huge division at RWJ Barnabas. RWJ Barnabas is this great mix of a great academic medical center with a great community system. Talk about your top three priorities as we get through the rest of this year and into next year.
Sure, Scott. Thank you. You know, usually it's very hard to come up with priorities, you know, only three, because there's so many things affecting the industry these days. This year is much different. The number one priority, hands down, and I would say most of my colleagues feel the same way, because the pandemic has changed the way healthcare is viewed and consumed. You know, people currently seem a little reluctant to go back to hospitals and other brick and mortar type of facilities. We're seeing that change, but changing slowly. So the number one priority for us right now is to build back our patient volume. We all heard the mantra, you know, no margin, no mission. Well, it couldn't be more true than what we're going through now. As we all know, the industry has seen patient volumes plummet over the last 5 months, which has clearly wreaked havoc on financial performance. You know, although expenses, you know, were reduced in some areas during the pandemic, unfortunately, the acquisition of PPE at elevated prices, unfortunately, really stunted any benefits of cost savings in any of the other areas that we focused on. So if you have expenses more or less at the old levels or a little above with these revenue shortfalls, this spells a lot of red ink, unfortunately. You know, thankfully, the CARES Act with stimulus funding will assist us greatly in getting through 2020. I'm not sure everyone can say that. But that being said, patient volumes need to come back between now and the end of the year for us as we get ready for the 2021 budget. As I mentioned, we're coming out of the pandemic. We don't have a lot of patients in New Jersey right now, so patients are coming back, but very, very slowly and cautiously. You know, and even though we're out of the COVID volumes that we saw in the spring, an associated priority for us is coming up with a resurgence plan. We're all hearing about, and I heard about it this morning, you know, there's going to be a bad flu season as well as COVID being around. That spells, you know, a lot of work and planning for hospitals. So if the coronavirus reappears in earnest over the next several months, we need to be prepared to care for the patients in an effective way and achieve the clinical outcomes that they deserve. The rest of the country is surging right now, or in some states, I should say. Other parts of the world are surging. And we all tap into the same PPE supply stream. So as outbreaks occur, that just makes it more and more difficult to get the supplies we need. In addition to PPE, our plan addresses a lot of issues that we don't have time to go into now. But a couple of things, you know, clinical best practices need to be migrated at all our sites. Physical plan changes need to continue to accommodate these patients. And how do you deploy personnel to busy hospitals or entities that aren't as busy? So the topics are many, but critical if we're to meet the next wave of the pandemic. I should also mention the care and well-being of our staff has been a top priority for us. A variety of resources have been devoted to care for their physical and emotional health. As I said earlier, our staff has been through a lot. They've either seen a lot, experienced a lot, or both, and their families as well have their day-to-day lives have changed. So many frontline workers have been affected by the virus. So we have a menu of services that we call Connect Together that is available to our employees as well as their families to help them through the crisis. And the last priority, or I have two other priorities for you, Scott. One is, despite the pandemic, we still need to conduct business. So to that end, you know, we have a system strategic plan, as most systems do. We still need to execute that plan. Population health is a big part of our strategy as we look to extend our asset base into other communities. You know, although we currently have access to five of the 9 million people in New Jersey with our current facilities, we feel further expansion is required to assure our long-term success. So as a result, we recently executed a couple of letters of intent to acquire other acute care facilities in several of our markets. And again, this is where integration, as I described earlier, is key to bringing those facilities successfully on board. We're also increasing our reach to diversify our revenue stream. So we've been aggregating a lot of ambulatory type services, imaging, ambulatory surgery centers, rehab, et cetera. You know, we feel the communities need these services and we want to control them. And, you know, this will hold us in good stead in a value-based model of reimbursement. So those types of strategies we need to continue to execute, and we're busily doing that. The last priority for us is continued expansion and improved performance of our medical group. Now, right now, I said we have a number of 8,000 physicians, but we employ about 1,000 of them. And that's soon to be doubled because we have a relationship with Rutgers that we inked a couple of years ago where we're partnering on academics, research, and clinical care. So we're going to be managing the clinical care aspect of that relationship. So we're going to have a lot of physicians on our payroll. So we recently hired an exceptional management team to operate the medical group that we're very bullish on. So a top priority for us is to increase the group size, as well as develop a more integrated medical neighborhood, along with ancillary services to better service the communities that that we're in currently. So that's a quick overview, Scott, of some of the top things we're working on right now.
Tom, it's fantastic. It sounds like it's on a great growth trajectory and doing great things. And I appreciate you so much taking the time to spend with us today in the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. Just a magnificent career and magnificent system. Thank you, Thomas Biga.
Thank you, Scott. Pleasure.